ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 680 AM, or of course, 929FM ESPN, or you can listen on the Odyssey app. We're also streaming live on the TuneIn Radio app, as well as the iHeart Radio app. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
It's going, my man. It is going. My company, as he is each and every Tuesday, occasionally on Fridays. He, of course, is the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, the College Football Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 8 a.m. Central Time. Check your local listings. You can see him on VSiN Primetime. Follow him on the Everything app at One Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Hello, hello. How we doing, man?
It's going. I mentioned it on the early show. I won't get it too much into it. I had to miss yesterday. I was involved in a wreck, and a guy lost his life, and it was terrible. Jesus. But yeah, it's been one of those days. So I kind of want to talk about sports so that I can think about something else for just a couple of hours. So we'll talk some football here in just a moment. Then we'll get into our weekly awards. A lot of good candidates for team of the week. A lot of good candidates for dumpster fire of the week. A lot of good candidates for Heisman trophy or Heisman winner of the week. I don't know if there were a lot of great candidates for most college football moment, but I think there were at least a couple. We'll get into what we got right, what we got wrong. And we will give out the awards during the next segment. We'll get into the list coming up during hour number two. We'll get into last night's action. What an ALCS game seven. What an ALCS it was indeed. One of the best, I think, crowd pops I've heard in a very long time with that seventh inning home run last night.
Can I ask you something real quick? Because I was on air last night when Springer hit the home run. Someone tweeted me and said you could hear during the Seahawks game when Springer hit the home run.
So So I was over at a buddy's house last night. We had baseball on the phone, and when he hit the home run, I think they were still showing, ESPN was still showing the rest of the Lions game.
Oh, okay.
So I guess like they started the game on ESPN2 because, you know, they went straight back to back. So I'm not doubting that person. I just cannot confirm nor deny.
Okay. I don't know if anyone else noticed. I had someone tweet me, and I was like, that makes sense. For folks in Seattle, the 12th man, I got to imagine, was a little distracted.
The 12th man looked pretty deflated.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, it wasn't a home game, but you could tell, like, that is very much a Mariners town. My mom went to high school up there. My dad used to have a company that he represented, so I've spent a lot of time in Seattle. Like, that team matters to that part of the world.
Well, and you think about, franchise has never been to the World Series. You're up 3-2. You're going back. I mean, yeah, that's the brutality of baseball, man. There's nothing better than, I mean, any sport really, but there's nothing better than having your team make that magical run. I was fortunate enough to enjoy it in 2019 with my Nats. But prior to that, man, we were kind of in that gut punch standpoint. But that franchise that I cheered for had been around since 05, not the late 70s. So you feel for Mariner fans for sure.
No, and I mean, like, that's kind of also...
But then on the flip side, the Blue Jays, I mean, it's been a generation since they've been to the World Series. So, I mean, their fans are probably going crazy as well with that home run. I mean, I still vividly remember the Juan Soto single to right field in the eighth inning of the wild card game in 2019 and the roar that crowd had when the Nats tied the game, and then it was a double roar because then it was an error in right field that allowed another run to score and they took the lead. It's playoff baseball, man. It's hard to top it.
Well,
it's also so great.
It's brutal in that sense that, okay, you're up 3-1, and in the back of your mind, you're just like, just don't give up home runs. Like, because a playoff 3-1 lead, and then obviously, I mean, credit to Springer. I mean, that's as big of a swing as you're going to have. But there's also like that, then you just go back and you think about, didn't they have bases loaded in like the second or the third, they being the Mariners, come away with nothing. They had an opportunity to have a pretty big first inning. They only get one. And then you just start reliving, and it's just absolutely brutal in the sense of like every base runner in playoff baseball that doesn't score just feels like death.
And you think about, I'll give you a little gambling funsy last night. So it was 2-1 Mariners, and I was like, I'm going to take the Blue Jays here. And as soon as I hit place bet.
You got dumped on?
Big Dumper hit his homer. And I'm like, all righty. Well, that was fun, and I kind of gave up hope on it, and lo and behold, Springer hits that absolute bomb. So I'm excited about this World Series, man. I really am. I think this Blue Jays team has been a really fun team to keep tabs on, and obviously you've got the juggernaut that is the Dodgers, who are playing like what we expected them to play like.
Like the team that has the best players and the biggest payroll?
Yeah, it's a team that has three MVPs atop their lineup and the greatest human ever to play the sport. It was one of those things on Friday night, man, where I had the double screens working, and I couldn't turn my eyes away from Otani. Like, no, he did on Friday night is...
You and I have talked about this, that one of the more annoying aspects of today's culture is the fact that anytime something cool happens, it has to be the greatest ever.
Yeah.
The truth is, there is not a case against, if you want to make the point, Shohei Ohtani had the greatest postseason game ever. There's not a case against it. Because think about it in these terms. No human being has ever hit more than three home runs in a postseason game. He ties that record. He also did it in 9 innings. And then on top of that, he's the winning pitcher. He strikes out 10, and I don't believe he gave up an earned run in a closeout game. I looked it up. Ruth never hit a home run in a game that he pitched. So he had to have done something historic, let alone get the win, and then strikes out double digits. Like, there's no argument that there is a better single game from one player.
I'm hesitant to say he's the greatest baseball player ever because of just longevity. But he's the most talented player we've ever seen.
I've never seen anything like him.
I mean, he's like a kid in high school baseball that's got a Division I scholarship playing against, us. And you're just like, that dude's different. And he's doing it in the major leagues. Like, it is, and that's why, I know the reason I've always been a LeBron fan is just because of the talent. I know he does a lot of goofy stuff off the field.
No, he's the best.
Floor,
the 23 for the Lakers or 6 for the Heat, 23 for the Cavs is the greatest basketball player I've ever seen.
So I enjoy watching that and the longevity we've seen. I know he's out tonight and he's out for a couple weeks, but that's why, Ohtani, man, I'm almost like happy he went to the Dodgers because we were wasting him with the Angels. And now he's on the juggernaut, and now I really would love the Blue Jays to beat the juggernaut, and it's certainly possible. I mean, look, as crazy as it sounds,
I know it's
a regular season, but man, they had to play in the wild card round. There were two teams better record-wise in the regular season, and they've got to go to Toronto to start this thing, and man, it feels like they've got some special mojo going. It's going to be challenging, but it's baseball. Crazy things happen in baseball.
I know this could be considered no duh because the Blue Jays just won a 7-game series against the Mariners. But, like, I mean this, actually. If the end goal is to beat the Dodgers, I think the best chance we have is the Blue Jays.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Like, I love the run that the Mariners were having. And, like, all of it was amazing. But I have just felt like when watching the postseason this year, I was like, if there's someone that can beat them, this feels like the next best team.
And maybe it's just wishful thinking.
Sure.
Because we always want a 7-game series. But this, it does feel like I know people believed that the World Series was kind of the Phillies-Dodgers NLDS. And maybe they were right because the Brewers obviously had no shot. And I don't know what the heck happened to their bats. They just... And when you're facing that rotation and it starts off with Snell basically throwing an absolute gem against you and Yamamoto comes out and throws a complete game, you're like, all right, this was fun. So,
though, it is the thing with the Dodgers that if you're going to beat them, you have to get to their bullpen. And it's like Milwaukee never got to the bullpen. Like, to me, like, so we can talk more about it during hour number two. All right, so that kind of leads me to the question. So, like, okay, have the Dodgers just separated from everybody? I find myself wondering, as the teams that we thought we could trust continue to lose, should we still consider Ohio State separate from everybody else?
So, I was texting with a buddy of mine yesterday who I respect his college football opinion quite a bit. And he kind of... and he kind of dropped in the, what's the best offense Ohio State has faced?
Okay, so I think... I think it's a... Because I do think this clouds... I'm glad he brought this up because we felt like we could... even though you came here on Friday and I told you, I know the correct gambling play is to take Louisville on Friday night. I just couldn't do it, and I did not take Miami, but that tells you something. I just kind of wondered, for the same argument would be, okay, well, we've seen Texas is maybe the only offense worse than Texas in Power Four is the one that they played on Saturday.
South Carolina's pretty bad, too.
South Carolina was able to put up more points than Kentucky. We have a data point.
That's true.
Like, they did smoke them. So... Texas is one of the worst offenses that we've seen. I think there's a legitimate case that with Parker Navarro, it might have been Ohio's offense. I'm not kidding. I'm not even being funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you were saying. I thought you were saying that Ohio might be the worst offense. Okay.
No. That might be the best offense that they've seen.
Yeah. I mean, it should be Washington, and they... You know, they suffocated that offense pretty well. And I'll give them credit for it. You go out there, you hold them to 234 yards. They don't really
so
get the,
I,
the
I have a Washington
going.
Theory because I've wound up betting them the last couple of weeks. And I've got
off, that number this week. I'm glad I stayed off of that. Seemed like a sucker's play there.
Okay, well, that was the syndicate. That was, and also someone wanted them live. And that after Michigan got two tackles hurt, and they're like, let's take it live because I don't know if people are going to react to that. So I think they are the offense. You see this a decent amount in college football. I think they're an offense that scores points on average to below average defenses, and it looks overwhelming. But I think when they go up against good defenses, they're incredibly stale.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's kind of, even though it doesn't look the same, like, Heupel's offense historically, and it's not so much now because I don't think really anyone out there has, like, the dudes up front that used to exist, but, like, Heupel's offense at, like, the peak of the Georgia era, like, the same thing would happen. If they play average to below average teams, they would blitz them and you'd go, my God, this is the best offense I've seen. But then when they go up against teams that could kind of man up with them, it would not, it'd stop working.
So going back to this Ohio State team, so they're undefeated. They look like the best team in the country. They really won't be tested until Michigan. And I have to throw in Michigan because they've lost four straight times to them. And they were, what, a 20-point favorite a year ago and lost that game en route to the national championship. So on the road at Michigan will be weird. And then they've got the Big Ten championship game. And I believe in Indiana, but how much will I believe in them on a neutral against Ohio State? I also think that Julian saying this has been the perfect kind of just slow build
absolutely
for him, because they told him in game one, essentially, you're not going to do anything here. We trust our defense. We know Texas stinks and we're going to stop them that way.
And we're going to ask you to make a couple of big throws. Like that was, I told you that in real time, their numbers weren't that different, but watching the game, I thought Saiyan played so much better than Arch. And now, like, in hindsight, it's like, well, duh. But I also, like, I think that that's kind of exactly what I mean, is that his numbers may not overwhelm you, but when you watch him play, I feel like you always leave more impressed than whatever the final numbers were.
Now, here's the question that I would ask. Now, I am in the bag with Alabama and have been since the summer. In a neutral setting, national championship, who would you take in that game right now? I think Ohio State.
Oh, I wouldn't blank Ohio State.
You're probably right. Alabama's proven a lot more so far. But Ohio State might not need to do that, right, until they have to. I think we could be in for an eye-opening experience in the Big Ten championship against Indiana.
Okay,
and
so that
I kind of hope I'm wrong. I kind of hope I'm wrong in that Indiana. Look, Indiana deserves all the credit in the world to go out to Oregon. We talked about it last week, the things that impressed us about that performance. You walk into Lucas Oil and you're going to pretend like, oh, it's home field advantage. There'll be more Ohio State fans there. And you better buckle up because they're going to throw things at you. I truly believe that Ryan Day, whether you hate him or love him or somewhere in the middle, I think he, and maybe I'm giving him too much credit because there's no doubt he wanted to beat Michigan a year ago and they laid an egg and Chip Kelly called a terrible game. I think they held back stuff for the playoff and I think they're doing it again. And I think they're so good, they don't need to really show all their cards until they have to. And I think they're going to do that.
I think the distinction I would make is I agree with you last year. I think there was some load management. And then last year in the Michigan game, I mean, I think at this point it seems obvious that, like, Howard was concussed. Like, he probably shouldn't have been playing, but whatever. And then that game spirals on them, and it was what it was. I think this year, I don't necessarily believe that it's they're holding stuff back. I think it's that they're slow, to your point, I think they're slowly building with Saiyan, and so that they're not ever giving him too much until he starts to really get comfortable. We kind of saw this, remember last year with Sam Levitt down at Arizona State? If you watched Arizona State the first couple of weeks, they were kind of holding his hand. And then by midway through the year, he was playing with a ton of confidence. And then by the end of the year, you're like, this guy might be one of the best quarterbacks in college football.
This guy doesn't even need Cam Scataboo.
Right.
He's that good. Or he didn't know. No, that's not true. He needed. He didn't need his top wide receiver, right? Didn't
correct.
His top two
in the Iowa State game.
So I don't. I think most people right now listening in, and I think a lot of people are college football fans, follow the SEC, I would imagine, and follow the national stuff. Who are the quarterbacks we've been talking about all year? It's been Mendoza at Indiana. It's been Diego at Vanderbilt. It's been Ty Simpson at Alabama. Julian Saiyan is completing 80% of his passes. He's got 19 touchdowns, the three picks. Like, he is quietly, and now the odds reflect it because he's now third in the Heisman voting. But, like, Carson Beck, turd in the punch bowl Friday night. Adios, dude. You know, Damon Williams, poor performance against against Ohio State. Julian Sands just kind of quietly chugging along.
He wasn't great either on Saturday.
No,
I know we're now getting to the point with Damon where he's clearly banged up, and so, like, I don't want to just sit there and kill the kid. But he had opportunities. Like, Michigan in that first half was begging to get beat. All right, I'm trying to look it up. I'm trying to do Ohio State's schedule from memory. Okay, they've played Texas, like Grambling, I think, Ohio, Washington, Illinois, Minnesota. Have I missed one?
And Wisconsin last week.
Allegedly?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to look it up, I don't know how you...
Oh, and did you say Minnesota?
I did say Minnesota.
Okay.
I don't know how you... I don't know, like, what offensive metric you care about, and I understand this is not adjusted, so I'm just going offensive points scored per game. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Illinois is number one at 33 points per game. Washington is 40th at 32.6 points per game. Ohio is 65th at 27.4. Texas is 81st at 25.7. And Minnesota's 88th at 23.9. So based on, and then if I go maybe over to SP Plus, I'm still going to bet the highest ranked offense is going to be Illinois, and Illinois is going to probably be somewhere in that 30 range. So, I mean, there is an argument maybe that their defense isn't quite this good.
Now, you could also say that because they played Ohio State, their numbers are skewed.
Correct. I guess this would be my – if I'm trying to be super critical, or if I'm sitting there going, okay, what would give this team problems? I do think if you – I'm not convinced that their defensive line's, like, dominant. Their back end's special. I mean, that – I don't know. Yeah. So maybe if you get a team that can just line up, run it right at them. I mean, it sounds similar. Like, what Michigan wants to ideally be, but they've not proven that they can be that, that could be a team that can give them problems. The problem that I have is, okay, of all these teams that we think are in that category, who presents that challenge? Notre Dame? Maybe A&M?
I'll say this quickly about Notre Dame. The injuries are starting to pile up a little bit for them. And I don't trust their defensive line to get enough pressure on Julian Sayin. And you saw it a bit on Saturday night because Mayava had time. Notre Dame has one elite corner in Leonard Moore, and he is elite. But Carnell Tate is probably going to go for like a buck 80 if they were to play each other. I just don't think Notre Dame, in my opinion, has the back end secondary to slow down.
Right. And
this
Ohio State team. Problem is, okay, we're looking for a team, and maybe this is the answer, but I don't know if I necessarily believe in it. Is A&M maybe the team? Because I trust A&M's running game more than I trust Alabama's. Does anyone disagree with that? George, you can feel free to chime in.
No. I agree.
And I think A&M's defense, yeah, the final score, what it was. By the way, we got to talk about Petrino. Petrino trying to cover is like watching Picasso paint.
By the way, did you see my tweet today? The fired coach bump tweet?
Well, he called timeout with 8 seconds left to get another pass in. down 10.
The fired coach bump is 6-1 against the spread, and the only non-cover was Virginia Tech, because they played an FCS team and they won by 32 as a 35-point favorite. So we will see if Colorado State takes care of business and keeps it rolling here with the fired coach bump. But yeah,
does it count if you fired your coach
before a bye?
Right. After a win,
Florida have the bump.
Like, well, will Florida have a bump next week?
I didn't put that on there because we don't have a point spread yet for that game, but I certainly could see it. I mean, The two glaring ones are UCLA and UAB. Man, they really didn't like their head coach.
Well, and like we were talking about it on Friday.
Oh, I'm so mad at myself. I hitched my wagon to the wrong look ahead spot.
Yeah. I fortunately threaded that needle perfectly, because I was just scared enough that I was like, having known some guys that played for Trent Dilfer, I could easily have seen where that was going to be the case. And obviously, everyone I know that knows Alex Mortensen, like, thinks very highly of him. Like, yeah. Always is what a good dude this is. And so I could have seen that. Did I think they were going to win outright? No, but like that was also. You could have seen yourself being like, I'm an idiot. Memphis runs for 500 on them. Or you could have what ended up transpiring. I think there's also, though, it was shocking in the way that it happened. A.J. Hill can make plays that Brennan Lewis couldn't. I'm not sure this is the world's worst thing.
Betting market says it is. So we need to talk about this, because Memphis right now is out to a 5.5-point underdog. The look-ahead line was Memphis 3.5, minus 3.5. So it has moved 8.
I think that is an overreaction to starting quarterbacks out, and I don't think the average person knows the most talented recruit Memphis has ever signed is A.J. Hill.
I think that's some important information.
And if you watched it, here's where A.J. gets in trouble. He still has the game mechanics of a freshman. Like, they took a delay a game. Like, it doesn't look as crisp. But he can definitely make plays that Brennan Lewis cannot. Now, that could also burn you, because he definitely has some get outside the pocket YOLO stuff.
I think for this team, like this specific Memphis team, the way it's built right now, is not favored towards AJ. Just they don't have receiver talent.
Yeah. Better receivers, AJ,
because his arm talent is
it's
ridiculous.
It's eye popping how much different he throws the ball. But I do think Brennan, in terms of the way he runs it
and management,
and just he's played a ton of football. Okay, then the other big question that I had, and we've discussed it a little bit, because I remember bringing this up, I don't know, maybe a month or so ago. I'm curious to see, do we think the coaching carousel affects the season?
Ask Nebraska.
Is that what happened, or did what happen is every other Minnesota-Nebraska game that we've seen just happened? That was one where the number made so little sense that I didn't bet it. But I was like, what? Every Minnesota game's the same. Fleck just runs it on Nebraska. They cannot do anything. And then he forces them to try and throw it all the way down the field, and they can't do it.
I also wonder, too, I'm getting to the point, and you know, we'll see, because it's such a great spot for South Carolina on Saturday against Alabama, because Alabama's just gone through this insane gauntlet. Like, I don't think, has a team ever done this in recent memory, where you just, Georgia, Vandy, Missouri, and Tennessee, all top 25 teams in a row, boom, 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 boom. You get the revenge game.
And by the way, of those, what, half are on the road? Like, what, Missouri and Georgia are on the road, and they get Vandy and Tennessee at home.
So, but I do, I'm starting to kind of get the feeling right now, Shane's leaving. He's like, this is going sideways. We're not going to have a good year. I can reset the clock, go back to Vanderbilt, you know, be the prodigal son returning home. I don't know. I'm very curious about Saturday, so because I really want to bet South Carolina, but good Lord, is that offense horrendous. It's so bad.
I also understand Oklahoma's defense is going to make a lot of bad offenses look even worse. There was, at no point did I ever think South Carolina was even remotely in that game.
So I bet South Carolina. Same. But I had the under, too, so at least I
split,
essentially, you know, gave back the vig. But I was watching that game, and like, there's no chance. There's just no.
I turned it off.
Doing anything. And I was like, there's no way.
There was other games on. I was like, I'm not watching this.
Well, as my VSiN co-host lets me know all the time, there's nothing worse than hope. So,
no, and I was just like, absolutely, I totally agree with Matt on nothing worse than hope.
It's worth it. There's nothing worse than hope, man.
Tennessee getting it back to within a 2-point conversion of getting inside the number, and then you realize they're not going to get the number. Now the math's, now you've gone from an 8-point game to a 10-point game. Oh God, it was just the absolute worst. But like, to me, like, there's a few at play.
So do we answer the question? Well, the question was, is it back to who do you trust, or is Ohio State by far the number one team? What's the question?
The question is Ohio's, is we, there have been a few teams that, like, we kind of thought Miami was going to be different than everybody else on their schedule. Is Ohio State better than everybody else on their schedule? I'm not including the Big Ten title game.
Is Ohio State better,
like,
than,
do they deserve to be considered different?
Yes, I think so.
I do too, but I'm worried this is the trap.
Who on that schedule, maybe the juggernaut that is UCLA, who on that schedule right now gives you, I guess it has to be Michigan. Like, whatever it is about Michigan, and at some point, Ryan Day, maybe he exercises the demons, but like, until they do it, on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I don't know. I remember vividly last year sitting in the Coliseum getting ready to watch Notre Dame and USC and looking up and be like, is Michigan going to beat Ohio State? I'm like, what the hell is happening? And they, I mean, that was not a very good Michigan team. And I don't know if this Michigan team's that good. But for some reason, they get up for that spot. I mean, I know why.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, I don't know, I can see where Michigan can win outright, and then I can also see where, like, going up against that defense with that those receivers, Underwood just has, like, one of the all-time worst days ever, and that game gets sideways.
Oh, I could totally see it. Like, I don't really like this Michigan team, and I think getting punked by USC and then what happened to USC in South Bend kind of makes you raise your eyebrows and say, man, what is this Michigan team, right?
I think they want to believe there's something that they're not. I think they want to believe they're still like Harbaugh and they can just line up and run it and stop the run against anyone, and they can't. And then they're sitting here wasting like a generational talent at quarterback because they're still trying to make him like run the same offense that J.J. McCarthy and Cade McNamara ran.
Good old Cade McNamara.
Never forget. All right, now let's get to the whole coaching carousel aspect. Because obviously, you know, Lane to Florida is only going to heat up.
Yep.
Keith Carter, the athletic director of Ole Miss, has publicly stated he wants to get an extension done in the same fashion that Indiana did with Kurt Cignetti. It hasn't happened. Doesn't mean it won't happen, but it hasn't happened.
What's the local temperature on Lane to Florida?
George, you tell me.
On me or
what do you think? Hey, give me your thoughts and give me what you think the, because obviously not every single fan's the same, but what, sure, do you think the majority of the fan base is feeling?
Based on what I've seen, a lot of it is the same conversation of, is Florida that much better of a job right this second in 2025? I mean, based on the last handful of coaches, a lot of people are concluding no, probably not.
Now, that's the fan thinking. What's Lane thinking?
So this is the problem.
Wrong people to ask.
I think if you are actually comparing the two jobs, I think the smart thing to do would be to stay at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Because
I agree.
To because me,
he's not getting fired at Ole Miss for
ever.
No, yeah.
Listen,
never.
They I've been saying this. If you noticed, when these teams push in their chips and they go all in and it doesn't work, the coaches have been paying the price for that. Ole Miss pushed in all of their chips last year and went all in to make the playoff. They did not. Lane got an extension. Other coaches are getting fired.
To that point, though, a lot of these coaches were, you know, teams are going all in like last year and most of this year for Penn State. Those teams also are struggling in the season. I feel like we would be looking at it differently if Ole Miss wasn't 6-1 right now.
So here's the interesting part about Ole Miss, right? They got a big one this weekend against Oklahoma.
Where
they're an underdog.
I think you can make the argument this is the biggest game
Yeah.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you might have to talk me off Ole Miss here.
So here's the problem. I think we figured out, because George and I were very confused by Ole Miss's defense, because like our eyes told us this defense isn't that good, but their numbers were decent.
The results were not the same.
Decent. But now I think you do the calculus of, okay, if they play an average to above average offense, they get exposed. Because Arkansas clearly has an above average offense, Georgia has an above average offense, and they couldn't get stops. Like that game, the Arkansas game largely came down to two missed field goals and a fumble. The Georgia game came down to they had a fourth and two to get a stop, couldn't do it, and they couldn't, like, they, I think Georgia scored every single possession.
Every single possession.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does Oklahoma have an above average offense?
That's the question.
I don't think they do. I think they've got a mediocre to below average offense, but they have an elite defense. And can the offense for Ole Miss be enough to overcome an elite defense? And then on the flip side, I think this game is the most intriguing game of the weekend.
Here's where this game comes down to from that perspective. It's going to be a matter of, for basically three quarters, Ole Miss was able to play a game that did not ask Trinidad Chambliss to basically throw the – basically the only throws they asked him to make were outside the numbers or the stuff inside of 10 yards.
Hey, did you know that he didn't play in front of a lot of people?
No, I haven't heard that.
Yeah.
It's news to me.
I looked up
some numbers, and I bet you it'll be brought up on Saturday.
It might get mentioned once or twice.
Because, you know, a lot of people go to Oklahoma games.
The question will be, can Oklahoma make Trinidad? It took four quarters for Georgia to figure out a way to make Trinidad try to throw it somewhere in that 10 to 15.
The intermediate stuff.
Can Oklahoma do that immediately? If the answer is yes, then I don't love that Ole Miss ticket. But I think there's still this weird, like, I don't know. That was such a weird game for me in that Ole Miss lost. And yeah, everyone was killing their defense. But man, like, it was tough for me to be super critical of that effort. They had the ball five possessions and got five touchdowns. They had a two-score lead on the road in a place that was completely jacked up. Like, it was tough for me to sit there and go, like, well, little old Ole Miss. Like, I that was a pretty good effort.
My whole thing with it, watching the game as well, was, if you had asked me going into it, okay, this is going to end up being a shootout, which I would have been like, first off, you're lying to me. But if you said one of these defenses is going to end up figuring it out during the game, very easily Georgia's the correct answer there. No questions asked.
Well, and Stanford Steve was there for College Game Day, right?
Yep.
And
yeah.
On his post-game podcast with Van Pelt, he made the point, you guys can agree or disagree. He's like, only Kirby is winning that game. He felt like he's the only coach in the country that wins that game. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just thought it was an interesting take.
I think Kirby, I've always wondered this. Kirby gets credit for second half adjustments, and I do think he's very good at it. Like, I think the numbers bear it out. They are one of the best. But like I'm always scratching my head. It's like, why do they always look so unprepared in some of these games?
Is that the best game Gunnar Stockton's played in his life?
Yes.
Yes.
He was awesome.
Phenomenal.
And does that make you think that Georgia can win the national title?
No, because we were talking about this on Friday. Like, I have the guts to come out and say, like, I just don't trust him. And I understand, like, the guy makes winning plays and whatnot, but, like, we're not asking him to go and make the winning plays against Ole Miss. It's, can he go make the winning plays against the Alabamas? Can he make the winning plays against the Ohio States? The Texas defense, like, that's going to be an interesting one. Like, I think Texas offense is so inept that it doesn't matter. But, like, when he goes up against the really good defenses that it's going to take to win a national title, that's where I don't trust him. It's the Notre Dame game last year.
Sure.
All right, we got to take a break, so let's take that now. When we come back, let's give out our awards for the week that was. We'll do weekly awards next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. plays a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal arc machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Tim, we got our Week 8 awards. Let's start with the team of the week. Who are you going with?
I'll hold off on one particular team for Heisman of the week. Got to go Louisville, man. This is what Jeff Brohm does. There were a lot of candidates, I think, for this award this week. But to go down to Miami to win 24-21, double-digit dog, Jeff Brohm does it again. He is now 4-0. All time against top five teams, which is just ridiculous to think about.
Not against the spread, by the way.
Straight up, boys and girls.
And by the way, he has been the coach of Purdue and Louisville.
Now, he didn't get a win over a top five team while at Western Kentucky, unfortunately.
Correct.
But
we're not talking about like premier. Oh, well, yeah, of course. He was the Michigan coach or what. You know what I mean?
He beat number two Ohio State by 29 in 2018. He beat number two Iowa by 17 on the road in 2021. He beat number three Michigan State by 11 in 2021. And also, don't forget, last year against 11th-ranked Clemson, they went to Clemson and won by double digits. I mean, I guess I'm a little disappointed they didn't win by double digits based off of the history for his big wins here. But Louisville goes down and makes things pretty darn interesting in the ACC and the college football playoff world.
So definitely, I think there were four candidates this week, and one I'm not going to offend the home people for doing that. Not that I really particularly care, but I think the other two options are BYU and Arizona State.
BYU deserves a lot of credit.
And I'm giving it to BYU because, you know, like this is, despite being undefeated, despite being at home, they're the underdog. No, you know what I mean? No one really takes them seriously. And what, all they've been the last 2 years is 17-2?
I don't know why I still have my reservations on that team, but that was a heck of a win. And here's the thing about BYU. They're really well coached, and they don't make mistakes. They don't beat themselves, and that number just kind of scared me. So I stayed off of it, and credit to BYU. They're now 7-0. We kind of wrote them off when Retzlaff, you know, left, air quotes, the program, and now they're 7-0, man. This is a really impressive job by Kalani Sitake, who, by the way, wasn't he on the hot seat like 2 years ago?
Yeah, because they had like a disappointing whatever the year after the COVID year.
That's right, because they had a really good COVID year with Wilson.
They had a good COVID year because nobody was playing defense, and so they're like, we're cool with this. Like, this is how we live. And ironically, like, now they've rebuilt this team as, like, a power football, good defense team. Like, it's tremendous. All right, dumpster fire of the week. I mean, I just don't know how it's not FSU.
So I've got them circled for the most college football moment.
Mm-hmm.
The ending of that game was something. Don't really know how it unfolded the way that it did. We've already done Wisconsin, so they're not eligible for it. I kind of wanted to do Auburn because of the quote that Hugh Freeze just gave on Monday, but I listened to it. It's not as bad as the quote sounds, where he was asked at his press conference yesterday with Florida State and Wisconsin ADs coming out and saying, hey, we're backing our guy if he would like one from John Cohen, the AD there. And he said it would be huge. That would make everyone feel a lot better for sure. But then he kind of went on and it wasn't that big of a deal. But I don't think Auburn's a dumpster fire. But, man, they keep finding ways to lose excruciatingly painful, don't they?
The side of the ball he's responsible for is a dumpster fire. DJ Durkin's a good coach, and that defense plays hard for him. His side of the football is an absolute dumpster fire.
That is a fun one this weekend. Arkansas-Auburn.
Boy.
Is Brace going to get that first win?
I mean, I don't know.
At some point, this Auburn team's just going to be like, this is brutal, man. I don't know.
I think they're still going to be able to run it on them.
And their defense is legit.
Their defense is legitimately good. Like, there's no getting around that. Heisman of the week, we mentioned it last segment, but I'll give credit to him. Gunnar Stockton, 26 of 31, 289, four touchdowns, 59 rushing yards. He also had a score there. I mean, he was a gamer, man. Like, in the end, that game, you can, if you really want to distill it down, like, it came down to which quarterback was going to make more plays. It's not like Trinidad Chambliss was bad, but Gunnar Stockton just outplayed him. No critical mistakes. Kept the thing rolling. Had a bunch of like tough scrambles that kind of kept drives alive where Ole Miss was kind of in like an opportunity to get off the field. Like he was very, very good.
My guy, Jeremiah Love.
I was leaving it for you.
Just an absolute badass performance from him. And CJ Carr, who we spoke about maybe last week.
He had a freshman game.
He did not play well. He had some mistakes. He had missed throws. He was kind of all over the place. And not only Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, too, deserves some love as well. But Jeremiah Love was unreal in this game. And the offensive line just absolutely pulverized USC's front. And it was just, it was kind of comical. And, you know, for Notre Dame fans, this was a really satisfying win because Lincoln Riley is trying to essentially put this rivalry on ice because they don't like to travel. They're trying to change it up. They want it to be earlier in the year. I mean, this is a rivalry that's been going on for almost a century, dating back to the, you know, late 20s. And Jeremiah Love and this Notre Dame offensive front just said, hey, we're just going to run it down your throat in the rain. We know you're miserable, and we're just going to destroy you. 228 yards on 24 carries. He had 37 receiving yards for on five catches. And then also, when it looked like USC was going to, you know, maybe pull this game out, Jadarian Price, the backup running back, goes 100 yards to the house on a kickoff return. So Jeremiah Love and that running back duo. You know, I came into the year giving the slight edge to Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen as the best running back duo. It's really not close anymore. These two dudes are by far the best running back tandem in the country.
All right, most college football moment of the week. I mean, to me, there were several strong candidates. Number one, the touchdown in the Tulane game that ended.
Oh, yeah,
because
terrible throw.
It was a horrible throw. If the two Army defenders were wearing different jerseys, I think it would have been targeting. They would have targeted each other. Like, you could have called that. The pass originally should have been intercepted, but they target each other. Then the ball should have been caught. He drops it again, but he pops it up, and he ends up catching it for essentially the walk-off touchdown.
Did you see the catch in the Duke game the Duke Georgia Tech game. It was not a touchdown. It was just for a first down, but the receiver literally popped it straight up in the air, olayed a defender, and then caught it.
I think that must have been it when I turned it off, because for the 55th time, I've bet on Duke.
Oh God!
I had in the first window, I had three teams that had defensive touchdowns against them.
I'll give you three quick moments. Number one, in the Duke Georgia Tech game, and immediately I knew I was doomed from the get go. They get, I believe, a three and out against Georgia Tech's offense. They go right down the field, no resistance at all. Read option, ball lying on the ground. Oh, I'll pick this up and run it back 97 yards. So, of course, I was on Duke. Closing line value, always great. Iowa lining up for a 66-yard field goal and getting it blocked and returned for a touchdown was pretty vintage college football moron coach decision. And then the end of the Florida State-Stanford game, I don't know how many people are up for this game. And Stanford, clearly the right side from a betting standpoint. They were like an 18-point underdog. First off, you get Thomas Castellanos getting absolutely destroyed, and I haven't seen an update. That was horrifying. I mean, his body just got destroyed. But the
it was very Tua-esque in terms of a concussion.
It was terrifying. Like, he just laid there motionless for a while. But the end of that game, they throw like a quasi Hail Mary to like the 10-yard line, right?
Yes, because he didn't have the arm to get it all the way there, yeah.
They catch it, they spike it. Or did they go right to the... I can't remember. I think they spiked it. They went to the end zone, pass interference, and then they ran a...
they had an untimed down.
Untimed down where they did a pitch to the running back, and he rolls over a Stanford defender, and I thought he was pretty clearly in, not being down. And they were like, no camera angle, not a touchdown. Game over.
Florida State sued the league. Game over.
Yeah.
Also Petrino. You just want to talk about it. Like,
oh, you had that too. Oh, we got, yeah. So do the Petrino one, because you had the cover off.
Correct.
In Michigan State, Indiana. Too.
Michigan State, the cover off was great because that was on the heels of East Carolina Tulsa was an elite cover off on Thursday night. You had Jonathan Smith kicking a field goal down 28 with like 30 seconds left. No reason to kick a field goal other than to cover.
Cover town.
That was it. All right, let me get you. So Arkansas begins their final drive with 3 minutes 51 seconds left, down 10. Number is 7. Taylen Green, pass complete, 6 yards. Taylen Green, pass up the middle, incomplete, nearly intercepted. Third and 4, loss of one. Fourth and 5, Green scrambles up the middle for 49 yards to Texas A&M 39. Taylen Green then sacked the following play. Taylen Green, short pass on a screen, 18 yards. Taylen Green, sacked for a loss of 18. Second and 28. Let's add a false start on top of that. Second and 33. Taylen Green completes a pass for 36 yards all the way down to the 15. We are now down we're 31 seconds left. A incomplete pass, then a quick pass that was complete with 18 seconds left. Petrino calls timeout calls a touchdown pass. 13 seconds, called a timeout, down 10.
I love it.
down 10. Like, I'm fine with you playing, but like, call the timeouts before that. Like, it
important to some.
Important to some.
Can I give a shout out?
Yes. Well, I was gonna say, could you fit it into what you got right, what you got wrong?
Yes, I can.
There
actually.
You go.
I was right on Hawaii.
The boys.
My boys are going to a bowl game, baby. First time under Timmy Chang, and they went and ended the Jay Norvell era. So. Hawaii, outside of traveling to the mainland, they shouldn't have been an underdog to Colorado State. It made no sense to me. And even if you did like the simple math of like recent teams that they played, it just didn't add up. So catching 3, 2.5, I was like, all right, I'll take the Bows. So they're going bowling. So get your plans ready for a Hawaiian Christmas, everyone. Hawaii Bowl, Christmas Eve, 8 p.m., 7 p.m.
Oh, it's back on Christmas Eve. That's good. It's where it traditionally should be.
And Hawaii's going to be in it, barring, I don't know, a run to the New Year's playoff or something like that. So I was right on Hawaii. I was right on Kentucky. I thought that
the Enron bet.
I thought that would be the post Red River 0-5 now ATS following Red River for Sark. And what else was I? Oh, and Louisville. Those are my three that I would say I was most right on, because I got some wrong. Who, buddy, did I get some wrong?
We're both on Kentucky. Like, that was the obvious. Duh. That line made no sense. I just straight up said UConn is a better football team than Boston College, and that was...
I'm mad at myself on that one. I actually did bet a little bit on it, but I didn't give it out on my podcast, and I was annoyed that I didn't do that.
And just, I don't know, like, the thing about the Vandy game that was interesting to me was how... not like how undramatic it was.
I thought that would be an under game. Man, I was wrong on that. I thought that was the pace that both those teams play at, but.
Well, they finished drives. Like, that's the other thing. Nussmeier played awesome. Like, he was making big throws. He was under duress. Like, but it was just kind of like you're watching it in the first quarter and you're like, Vandy's just better. And that's just kind of how the game played out. What I got wrong, I have to. Duke has to be a no play for me. I can no longer bet Duke.
Yeah, I think we might have to retire Duke. I might have to retire Purdue as well. I keep saying, oh, you know, they're not that bad.
Look at the spot.
Yeah, good spot coming off Penn State. No. I had Duke. I had Penn. I had
Ark Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.